Hello, my peeps. Welcome back to another episode of Workday Playdate with Improve It. I am so glad you are here because we are kicking off a theme. It's still the theme from November. Okay, next week we'll start our new theme. We're still talking about effective communication. We're talking about how we speak, how we listen, what we say, and even what we choose not to say. And let's be honest, communication at work can get messy fast. We can misread tones. We can hear confusing emails. We can hear that awkward Zoom silence. We feel people shutting down, people holding in what they really want to say. And when that happens, trust disappears and teams lose their spark. Now, I just want to share this at the top of the show. That is exactly why our team at Improve It, the team that I have created and run, who I love so much, have created our effective communication workshop. It's for teams that are ready to communicate with clarity, build trust, and connect as humans. Now, we run this for up to 100 people in person for 2 hours or 50 people virtually for 90 minutes. Any participant learns how to use verbal and nonverbal communication, listens to understand instead of defend. You learn how to build rapport and use the improv concept of yes and to keep conversations open and collaborative. Strong communication builds strong teams, and strong teams, y'all, can handle anything. And that brings us to today's conversation. When pressure rises in the workplace, something subtle but dangerous happens. People stop being real. They hold back ideas. They hide how they're feeling. They communicate less honestly to avoid conflict or judgment. And what starts as silence turns into stress. It turns into burnout and it turns into tension. When we don't communicate authentically, resilience disappears. And that is exactly what our guest here today is going to talk about. Now, research shows that employees who feel safe being authentic at work are more engaged, they're more loyal, and they're more productive. When communication is open and real, people collaborate faster, they solve problems sooner, and they recover from challenges with more confidence. Resilience is not about pushing through quietly. It's about connection, honesty, and being human. And today's guest has turned that into a repeatable, teachable model. Nathan, or Nate Andres, is a global citizen and a seasoned HR executive with more than 25 years of experience leading teams across industries and continents. He has lived through some of the most intense events of our lifetime, including 9/11, devastating earthquakes and tsunamis, discrimination, personal loss. But through it all, he has built a reputation for resilience. Now, after years of research and reflection, Nate developed the REAL model, which you'll hear all about today. It's a framework that helps individuals and teams build authentic resilience. He's an author, a coach, a well-being, and LGBTQ activist, and he is truly out there helping people create change within their organizations and their lives. Let's welcome Nate Andres to Workday Playdate. Let's play. Nathan Andres, aka Nate the Great. Welcome to Workday Playdate. I'm so happy you're here.
What's up, Erin? How are you? That, I got to live up to the great part now. Thanks to you for that.
Yeah.
Loving it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can't tell me the nickname because I got to use it. It's so good. You have such a good vibe about you. You have so many amazing things that we are going to talk about, especially when it comes to authenticity on this show. Let's start off by doing this. Let's just take a moment, just take a deep breath, and let's set a one-word intention for our time together. We're talking about effective communication as we roll into this new month. We were talking about it all November, but we're going to stick with it for this show. Is there one word that you want to give or receive to our community today? We call ourselves the Peeps community. Is there anything that comes to mind?
What's up, Peeps? That's on the, I love that, Peeps. The word that came to my mind actually was two words. I am.
Oh, say more. Tell me why.
I am is a great reminder of who we are at the core. I am authentic. I am vulnerable. I am whole. I am oftentimes, we forget to say this to ourselves, good enough. Mm-hmm. I am achieving. I am all those things at once. So I am is a great mantra I use often to just reground myself.
Nate, I freaking love it. I am here for that. You know what I'm saying? So, okay. You call yourself a well-being activist. And when I heard that title, I was like, okay, that hits. Like, that has sparkle. What does that mean? And when did you know that that was your purpose?
It's a big part of my purpose. I kind of stumbled on it when I was not so well. if that makes sense. Well-being activists, what does it mean? It's about making sure that those of us who are out there trying to create a world that is better for others, whether that's through our organizations, through our mission-driven corporate work, through our personal purpose, in order to be able to make the world a better place, we've got to make sure we're taking care of ourselves first. And so well-being starts with us first. I like to say often, you know, you're not going to make it to the bank if you don't fill up the well-being tank. And it is a powerful way to remind ourselves that when your battery on your phone gets into the red flashing zone, the red zone, as I like to call it, you know, what do? You automatically charge that up. Mm-hmm. You like have a FOMO and you're like, I can't miss that. Mm-hmm. I've got to make sure I'm not going to miss an email or miss a phone call or a WhatsApp chat or whatever. You go plug it in. But what we often do as humans is we forget that when we're in the red zone as ourselves, that we got to plug in. And that is exactly how I discovered this work, is I had let myself go so far beyond the red zone. The battery was flashing. It was in what is called a burnout, if you've ever heard of that. I was in one of those.
Might know a few things. Just a few.
I laugh. Yeah. It's not funny. It's a funny, not funny kind of situation. But it was as a result of kind of hitting a really low that I realized it was really far away from my purpose. And out of that work became a personal movement to not only make myself better, but to also ensure that the places that I work in, the workplaces that I am going to belong, that I really try to make sure that we take care of people so that they can do their best work. And as an activist, I really today talk a lot about how my book, The Real Model, and how these constructs that we can create in workplaces can actually make workplaces better places for people to do their best work. And so that's kind of where my activism comes from a little bit, but it's larger than that. I'll stop there because I think maybe we're going to talk a little bit about some other things.
Yes.
But that's what I mean about it.
Okay. Never heard of burnout before. So new to it. Like, don't even know. Of course, like that makes so much sense. And I'm so glad you rose from it, right? Some people stay in it for a long time and you actually learned and are here to teach others the lessons, which I think is so cool. So I want to just jump to what you mentioned, which is the real model. Okay. And for everyone listening, because maybe they've read your book, maybe they haven't, if they're hearing it for the first time, what would the 2-minute coffee shop version of this model be? Like, what is it? Why does it work? Pretend you and me are at a coffee shop. You're like, here it is. Here it is.
Yep. So we're faced with adversity, challenge, and change every day. It's constant. It's nonstop. How do you get through life's roller coasters of wild, challenging times? The Real Model helps solve that. It is a model of resilience that is built on 4 key things that resilient people do. The first thing is around facing reality. The next thing that most resilient people do is they know how to harness their energy. Like I was talking about before, about that well-being tank.
Yeah.
It's all about energy management. But really important and core to the real model is the A, which is authenticity. It's about knowing not only who you are, but letting go of the things that don't serve you, and then enabling those two things to really fuel your purpose. When we are purpose-driven as humans, as individuals, knowing that we are working towards the self-actualization part of our lives, we actually do our best work. And last but not least, the L in the real model is about love. And it is truly about love making the world go round. That rounds out the model for this self-coaching and psychology model that I built, which is based on a lot of things, including, you know, some neuroscience, some physiology, and some kind of nerdy things that happen in our bodies. But when you put those four things together, you're able to get out of the hard stuff in life and actually come out better for it. You want to live a life of well-being and joy? Practice the real model, and you've got a formula for success.
Okay, let me repeat. Resilience.
Reality. It's about thinking reality. Yep.
Reality. Okay. Reality. Energy.
Yep.
Authenticity.
Bingo.
Love.
You got it.
Love it. Love, love, love. The L and the love and the it. So good. And I want to talk to, because when I was researching you for this show, I was like, holy shiitake mushrooms. Like, you have been through it. Some things that some of us have only seen in documentaries. And so let's talk about reality resilience. You putting this role model into context for your life, right? So what was the moment that you realized that you specifically, that your resilience was powerful? And how did you use the real model through that? Or did you develop it after? Where did this come from? Tell us those dates.
Yeah. Great question, Eric. It's always funny when people say, yeah, I was researching you. Thanks.
You're welcome.
I don't know.
You're welcome. Thank God for Google, you know? No, I'm just kidding. No, right. And your website was so helpful. Everybody, we'll tell the website at the end, but like such an interesting website.
Well, thank you. I've been thinking about resilience for a long time. And it wasn't until the COVID pandemic where I was starting to get a little bit annoyed by the world that was talking about building resilience. We need to be more resilient, and we're building resilient teams, and we're learning about resilience, and everyone, please be more resilient. And, you know, tune in at 5 o'clock for the update, as we're going to talk about how to be more resilient in facing the new, you know, whatever virus of the day. For me, I kept thinking, what are these people talking about? They don't know what resilience is. And we're conflating a lot of definitions of resilience. And so it was in this quest. And also during the pandemic, you know, we're all Zooming and having these great calls with people that we hadn't, you know, connected with because we thought the world was going to end and all these things. So I had this brilliant conversation with an old teacher of mine. And we were talking about kind of milestones and things that had happened in my life. Hard things. And she just flat out asked me, she's like, Nathan, you've done so many hard things and you've gotten through like 9/11 and you've gone through some hurricanes and a couple typhoons. You lived through that massive earthquake in Japan in 2011. Like, and now we're going through a pandemic. How do you do it? What's your magic formula? And I was like, you know, the COVID thing has not bothered me one bit. Why? I was thriving during COVID. Why? What made that be possible for me? And it was in that kind of moment that I started to think about how have I built resilience? What's the unlock for me? And the other part of that unlock, a big part, was my own authenticity. And so I put these two things together and started to think about this notion of what's authentic resilience. Resilience, actually, to answer the question that I asked and was frustrated with the world. Resilience is actually a two-part answer. The first part is resilience comes from taking back control of an adversity. We give control to hard things all the time. We render ourselves with no agency when something bad happens or, you know, something has happened to us. So So resilience is the first part of it is taking back control from something that's really difficult and saying, I'm going to do something about that. The second part of that definition of resilience is really then the growth and the learning that comes from taking back the control in that moment. So that by the next time you're going up the curve of that roller coaster and you hit another hard thing, you've got a memory and a learning and an activation in your body that says, oh, you know what? I've taken back control before. I know what to do. I have learned something from this thing. And so therefore, the next time you go through taking back control from something hard, you've got a little bit more resilience in you. But the way you do that, Erin, and to all the peeps out there, the way you do it is really unique and authentic to you. Because guess what? You have your own imprint on your own brain that is a collection of all the experiences and learnings that you've had since the day you were in the womb, to the day you came out, to the day that you are living today. And you'll have another set of impressions and experiences that are all hard-coded in your brain and body that makes it really unique and authentic to you. So how you do it, how you go through a typhoon or an earthquake or run a marathon and fall and break your leg is going to be really different than how I did it. And that authentic kind of clarity to the learning and taking back control is the magic power-pack combination of authentic resilience. And honestly, when you harness it and you harness that power, you can kind of do a lot of things and become unstoppable.
Yeah.
The byproduct of which is this kind of joy and well-being. You're like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened. And it was out of COVID that this clarity came to me.
I love it. I mean, you really have been through the ringer, Nate. Like, you've been through a lot. You've done a lot of things. And I feel like, too, just fun fact, I'm going to throw this in. My son won Student of the Month for resilience. Okay, just going to put
ding, ding.
Proud mom moment. But
yep.
I will tell you, let me just share my own example of this. Like, when COVID hit, at the time I'd been in business 6 or 7 years, but as a business owner, I had never had to experience that level of resiliency in my life. I've had resilience through many other areas, but as a business owner, I will never forget somebody saying to me, you know what? I made it through 2007, 2008 when, you know, the economy was super down. Now I know how to move through COVID and the pandemic. Now that I've been through the pandemic, I'm going to tell you, you can throw a lot at me. I don't ever want to repeat it. But like, it was a rocky. Everybody has their own 2020 story. But I'm here with you on that. Like, the way we all move through it, we all have the choice to change our attitude. Or we have two things, I think, that we control: our attitude and our efforts. And so the way that we move through life with our own resiliency and authenticity, I think, is like a case study, person by person. But when you allow yourself, what you're doing with your well-being activism, to like own it, give yourself power versus the situation power. So many cool things come to light. So,
yeah, you know, it's a great, you right on the money there, Erin. If we think about the companies that made it through, what enabled them to make it through? They were really clear about facing reality. They put their energy in the right place. You know, they empowered their people to focus and or double down on the things that they knew that they had to do while things were tough. They got super clear on their purpose and doubled down on their values and their beliefs and their strengths as organizations.
Yeah.
And they made sure that they loved on their people and they loved on their customers and they did everything they could to build that community. That is the real model in action as applied to companies and organizations going through hard times. And those that made it did those things. Those that did not, they're not here anymore.
Dang right.
And that's a sad song to sing, but that's the darn truth.
That's the darn truth. And I'm here. You know what? My dad was an entrepreneur. And during that time, he goes, Erin, just serve. Like, and I'm telling you, I got the PPP loan twice. You know, like we looked like we were doing it because online we were just giving out all kinds of content and information. And he's like, you just want to be serving, serving, serving. So when the time comes that people come back to the office, which is where the magic of our work happens, you're top of mind. And I did that and we survived. But I'm going to tell you, it was not by the skin of our teeth. It was not by like hanging on by a thread every single day. It wasn't for the lack of my sanity, but we did it.
It was the hair of your chinny chin chin.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like, okay, every day I'm pulling myself out of bed. We're doing it. We got through it and I'm better and I'm stronger for it, truly. All right, y'all, we are going to dive deeper into how the real model shows up in the workplace. But first, a quick pause. I hope you are enjoying my conversation with Nate Andres. We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You are listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now, back to my conversation with Nate Andres. Okay, let's pretend it's 2020 and you gave me a sign, like a little post-it note on my fridge about the real model. And you were like, okay, here is this tiny little card and here's one practical thing I want you to do today when it comes to the real model. What would my little tiny sticky note say?
It would probably say three words. Trifecta of self-love.
Ooh! And self-love is a hyphen, y'all. Okay, I am here for
that. That is a hyphen.
That is a hyphen.
For all of you counting out there, peace.
Yes, trifecta of self-love. Okay, dive into that. I want to know, trifecta? What do you mean trifecta?
Yeah, there is a trifecta of self-love. You know, this is another term that everybody throws out these days. Oh, I'm just taking care of myself, a little bit of self-love.
Yeah.
What do we mean by self-love? I dive deep into that. And I would tell you that during COVID and before, and even today, that those of us who are on missions to live life of well-being practice the trifecta of self-love. The first part of that trifecta is self-care. This is the stuff that we all know about. Hydration, good nutrition, sleep. Oh my gosh. You know, we're not sleeping enough these days in America. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that. Even though the time change is coming and it's going to get dark out soon, sleep more is my advice. But self-care is a huge part of self-love. And most people know that these are the things that keep us running and humming as humans. The other part, the second part, is self-compassion. You know, we beat ourselves up all of the time. And in fact, we treat other people way better than we treat ourselves. We are so compassionate as humans towards others. It's kind of hardwired at the species level for us as humans, is to take care of each other, heal with each other, care for each other. And yet we are so hard on ourselves. We allow our inner critic to self-sabotage and to second guess and to tell us all kinds of wrong things all the time. And we don't often propagate what I call the inner nurturer, the other side of the inner critic. Negativity bias is this thing that happens in our brains to help keep us alive. And often we listen too much to that. And today, the negativity bias and the threats that are out there in society are very different than the tigers and the bears that were going to eat us as more prehistoric people. We're attacked constantly by these other things that drive us to reconsider where our own self-esteem is. And as a result, we sometimes experience quite a loss in self-compassion for ourselves. You might have heard the phrase, shoulding on ourselves. You know, we shoulda, coulda, woulda a lot on ourselves, and then we beat ourselves up in shame and guilt. And so self-compassion is the other part of this trifecta. And to round out the trifecta, we need a third part. That third part is what I call self-advocacy. We don't often raise our hands to take care of ourselves. Mm. You know, we stay in the office and in the workplace. We never say, hey, boss, I need a day off, or I need a mental health day, or I'm taking my personal days, or hey, boss, or whomever, I have to take care of my kid today, and I'm going to focus on that because that's one of my values. Family is one of my values. I'm going to do that today. And advocating for ourselves is a huge part of then rounding out those other two. So self-care, self-compassion, self-advocacy in trifecta with each other enable us to really build not just a habit, or a routine, but a life of self-love, permitted, disciplined self-love. You know, we always say, oh, let's go for a vacation. I'm taking care of myself. That's self-care.
Yeah.
No, I would say like vacation is a jump start.
Yep.
It's only one. I'm going to have a mani-pedi.
Right.
That's self-care. Sure. But it's one thing.
Yep.
It's maintenance.
It's maintenance.
So it's an everyday thing.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Self-care, self-compassion, and self-advocacy. So I would say that would be the post-it I would give
you. I love it. And I see the triangle and I see them all sort of like falling around each other with this big self-love through the middle. It's so funny. As you were talking about this, I was thinking about my own morning today and like, I wasn't feeling super great for the past 2 days. And this morning I had my little class pass set to go to the gym at 6 a.m. Okay. Guess what? Yeah. Okay. That was me trying to
That's early bird errand.
Really rev it up. Well,
yeah.
I was like, not today. And I slept until 7:30. And old me, I feel like, I mean, this is a habit that will never die. Part of me was like mad, like, oh my God, you were supposed to get up and be on time and get your day started. And I started going down that rabbit hole. And then I was like, no, like I gave myself more sleep, which is what my body freaking needed. And I feel like I'm showing up better now because of it. It's just, and as a recovering perfectionist / people pleaser, like the one person I never please is myself. So that really hits. I'm going to put that on my fridge, Nate. I'm going to put it on my fridge. Okay. The trifecta of self-love.
I invite you. Do it.
So I want to talk about mental health just in general, because it's showing up so much more in the workplace. I actually feel like it is a hot topic now post the pandemic. More than ever before, where do you in your seat see it going in the future? And then what do you think people will miss if they ignore it?
Yeah, I think this is the huge competitive advantage that companies that are thinking really clearly about well-being in the workplace are gonna win. Those who are not considering well-being and mental health as a competitive advantage for their people are simply going to lose. I would tell you that I think the American Psychological Association said 9 out of 10, might be 8 out of 10 prospective candidates for jobs today look at what a company is offering in their mental health and well-being portfolio of benefits before they even consider taking the job. This is huge. When we start to look at where the workplaces are responsible, I would say it's a two-sided relationship. Workplaces and employers are absolutely responsible for creating the environment where mental health and well-being can thrive, so that people can do their best work. People don't ever, I haven't met these people yet, that they come to work and say, I just want to boop it up today.
Yes.
Like, I don't think that ever really is a thing. I think most people go saying, I want to go to work and do my best work and contribute and, you know, work towards this thing that we're all working towards at this company or in this mission or this purpose. And so companies and organizations are really responsible for making sure that they set up those environments and those workplaces so that people have access to resources, that people can self-advocate for themselves for time off and or for care of family and loved ones and or themselves, and that they provide, you know, inclusive places of belonging that, you know, enable people to be self-compassionate and show compassion for others and, you know, don't overwork people so that you can have a routine and a daily habit of self-care. On the other side, I would say that the relationship also is responsible from the employee. It is their responsibility to also show up and take care of themselves and be in those disciplines and practice those things. And when things are tough, you ask for help. You know, there's an expectation that the company has to provide it all. But we can't force someone to the doctor. We can't force someone to go see the mental health professional or to get a coach or otherwise. And so it is a two-way relationship that has to exist in simpatico with each other. And when we get that part right, which is companies saying, here's what we expect. We expect you to take care of yourselves and we provide these things. And we expect you to be part of that conversation so the employees can say, yeah, I'm ready to do this and I'm going to go all in. But when I need a break, or I'm a little bit burned out, or a lot of bit burned out, I know what I'm going to do to ask for that help. And so it has to be balanced and calibrated in this way. And there's, it's fascinating to look across the North American system. You know, I worked for many years across Asia Pacific, and I've seen a lot of different designs of how companies can provide these kinds of services. But North America has ample, if not the most, and some of the best care possible, and access points and pathways. I've seen companies offer free coaching and free mental health providers in and outside of workplaces, and accessible, you know, in a hybrid way. So there's loads of things that we can do. And I think the really important thing is to destigmatize mental health. We need to start talking more about therapy, open therapy. This is what I talk about love, you know, and the resilience model. If companies love money and they love their bonuses and they love their profit margins and they love all the payouts, they got to love on people so that you can start talking about how to love and care for people in the same way. And so a little bit of love in this way, when companies set themselves up with well-being in mind, with workplace mental health in mind, with resources in mind, people will want to show up and do their best work because they know that there's going to be a reciprocal balance of care.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love the L of love and real. I love it. I love this concept of people feeling like they are taken care of at work. I think we talk a lot about therapy on this show, and I'm in therapy, and I'll tell you, I really, really needed it 2 years ago. Now I'm in it for preventative care because I'd rather be preventative than reactionary. It's funny that you bring the word love up, because I do a lot of speaking too. And I always say it in groups of people, you can feel when you're in a corporate setting and you say the word love, like people, like their body shifts. They're like, no, I'm all twitching. Yeah, I'm squirmy. And I'm like, and then I counteract that with, you have two choices here, love or fear. So choose one. That's it. That's it. And the love feeling is so much more blissful. It brings you joy. It brings people around you joy. So I'm really into this. I'd love to hear, like, give shout outs to the companies that are doing this work for their employees. I think that's so amazing. Even access to great insurance, even access to, like, be able to have great insurance, to have a therapist, like, those things really matter. So I am so here for this conversation, Nate. Let me talk to you about this. This is an interesting concept that, like, pure curiosity, you know, this whole bring your full self to work, right? And I like to say that. I hope my people feel like they can bring it. For some people, it's inspiring, but for a lot of people, it feels very risky. So when you talk about this bring your full self to work, somebody who might be afraid to do that, what's something you would say to them, somebody listening today, to be more real and be more open? What would you say?
You know, I think it was another prolific author, a friend of mine who I really look up to, Mike Robbins, wrote the definitive book, Bring Your Whole Selves to Work. He really summarizes a lot of the great practices in that space. I think when I think about bringing your authentically resilient self, and truly the authentic self, that, you know, the A part of the my model, what I often say is start there. Start, you know, the model and the coaching pieces of the model can work in a lot of different ways. You can go forwards, backwards, upside down. But if you start with the A, which is really understanding who you are from the inside out. And I tell this from kind of an LGBTQ point of view. You know, I'm proudly an LGBTQ leader, a person, human, who has fought inside and outside of the closet and has worn the very heavy mantle of a double life. And I understand how hard that is to be your whole self at work, because I pushed myself back into the closet twice. You know, once when I was working in professional sports. Really scary place. But when you step out of that and you really start with you, that's the place you're going to really thrive, because you're being all of whom you're supposed to be. And so I would say this, and I've said this a couple times out there and into the world, peeps. So here it is in a nugget, is no matter the door, or I'm going to butcher it now. There we go. Yeah.
Okay, wait. Here it is. Ready?
One more time. Okay. 3, 2, 1. No matter the closet, open the door.
Yes.
Okay. We have so many closets. Mine happened to be an LGBTQ one, but, you know, there might be a disability closet. There might be, you know, a hidden shopping addiction. There might be, you know, some family skeleton, you know, that is keeping you from fully being you in your everyday life. And at work, that sometimes can slow us down too. So I often say, you know, no matter the closet, open the door. That principle is helpful because opening the door is that adversity that we're talking about. Seeing that as an opportunity to be your whole full self and then build the two-part definition of resilience around that, saying, I am going to take control back. I'm going to be me. I'm going to live into my values and I'm going to use my strengths and I'm not going to be stoppable. And I'm going to figure out, you know, what I learned from that. You know, I might trip on some stuff. And it might be ugly for me at work, you know, and I might make a total fool. But I would tell you that I myself and many other LGBTQ leaders that I've worked with and a lot of my clients who I coach on the side have said that once they open the door, there is no going back. And once you are out there doing you, you also coincidentally do your best work.
Yep.
So it's about finding and embracing a comfort level with that so that you can be you in all the ways. In your life, not just at work. Work is a small sliver.
Yep.
You know, like, let's get real about that. Work life is only, you know, 20% of the whole pie that you bring to your life. So show up as you in all of the pieces of the pie, and you've got, again, another winning combination of things that you can do to get to well-being and a joyful, lovely life.
Nate, okay, so many things about what you just said. Number one, do you realize you said your intention, I am, like 5 times? And I was like, yes, yes. You're like, I am unstoppable. I am blah, 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 which I loved, okay? And number two, I'm so in alignment with that. I feel like, it's just so much. And trust me when I say, like, finding yourself and owning that piece and owning your truth is so much easier than pretending to be somebody else. Like, I was pretending for a while to be somebody else. And then I was like, I'm freaking tired. I'm tired. It's tiring. It's like so much more easy to flow with the natural rhythm of who you are. And I'm
heck yeah.
And I'm so glad, like, you found, you know, you opened the door. You came out, you opened the door. You're living proof that the real model works. You've been through so many adversities and you've overcome them. You are strength. You are hope. You are resilience. You are power. You are all those things.
Justine, thank you.
Take it. Take that and receive that. Okay. So let me ask you this. Since it is Workday Playdate, we love playful twists and creative twists. So what is something, okay, no, let me do this one. I'm going to ask this one. Okay. If you could slip a handwritten note into everybody, into all the peeps' lunchboxes tomorrow, because we're adults with lunchboxes, what would that note say?
Oh, wow. That's a twist. No, I wouldn't say that. That's such a clever question.
But it could be, that's a twist. You could give a bop it.
That's a twist. Yeah. Gosh, I would say maybe don't forget who you are. You are loved. And when you love yourself, you're going to be unstoppable and you will get to a life of well-being and joy. This is my purpose. When I'm doing this work of building authenticity and resilience, enabling people to figure out how to do that for themselves, that is me serving my purpose. And it really comes down to just really taking care of people and reminding people that you can get to well-being and a joyful life. It's not so hard. Love yourself, be in it, you know, accept your spots and all the things that you don't like, Because that's part of who you are. And when you really embrace that, you'll get there.
Oh,
that's a long note in a convoluted note. Yeah. We didn't need to ask ChatGPT to refine there or something.
We need an XO Nate. XO.
XO. XO.
XO Nate. Okay. Well, speaking of XOXO, I have just so many hugs and kisses for you. You are so amazing. I'm so glad you came on the show. I know our peeps, which you can't even see my mic tag. It's hidden. It says Workday Playdate with the peeps. So, I know they're going to find you. Where can they find you? How would they locate you, get your book, all the things?
Yeah, I would love for the peeps to find me. I'm waiting for you, peeps.
He's got notes for your lunchbox. He's got notes for lunch.
Yes. Long-winded rigmarole notes for you all. Yes, you can find me at nathanandres.com and you'll see a link to my book there. You can also find me at LinkedIn. I've been a little quiet there lately, but I often post things about my real life, your real life, the real life, things that will be related to how to live a life of authentic resilience and getting to well-being and joy. You can also find me on Instagram. I am a slow adopter to Instagram. I'm still figuring that stuff out, but you can find me at Instagram at @NathanAndres_coach. Would love to see you there. Interact with me. I occasionally do fun things there, but post a lot of things and tools. The book is available on Amazon. It is also available in some bookstores. And if it's not in your bookstore, go ask your local bookstore to order it for you. It is available for all of you. It's really my gift to share the messages and the tools for people to live their best life.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Nate, what are you going to do to make the rest of your workday more playful today?
So, yeah, I love that you asked that. I'm going to sign off here and I'm headed to the gym for one of my routines, which is to go work out with my trainer and throw some stuff around.
And I'm
making a lovely dinner for myself tonight, which I'll share the recipe with you all. If you contact me, I'll give away some of my favorite recipes. But yeah, that's how I'm treating myself. It's not even a treat. That's how I live my life. So that's what I'm up to. What are you doing tonight?
Oh, I love it, Nate. Okay, so my son gets home in just a little bit and I'm going to make a yummy dinner too. I'm feeling cozy vibes. Remember we were talking earlier?
Yeah.
I'm going to make a nice little homemade dinner. We do boo baskets in our neighborhood. Like you get booed, you leave a basket on your neighbor's doorstep. Okay. We're recording this around Halloween. It's not coming out till later. But so basically we got booed and we created a boo basket. And we're going to go doorbell ditch our neighbor and run away.
There you go. Yeah. Boo.
Boo. Go. Oh my gosh. Well, you're amazing. Everybody go find Nathan Andres. And we will make sure we have all the links in the show notes. Your Real Life is the book. Pick the book up. And Nate, that's your intention. I am so glad you were here.
I am here for it, Erin. And I'm so glad you had me on today. Thanks for your beautiful energy and to the Workday Playdate peeps. What a great time. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll have you back. Nate, thank you for sharing your story, your heart, and your real model with us. You are the reminder that resilience is not about pretending to be strong. It is about being honest, being connected, and being willing to communicate what is real. My peeps, here is your homework. Today, you're going to pick one thing Nate talked about and actually try it. Maybe it's a daily check-in. Maybe it's showing up authentically as you. Maybe it's looking at yourself and giving that person in the mirror some love. Maybe it's getting real about how you're doing. I want you to try one thing, one little nugget from today's episode and see what shifts. Until next time, my peeps, keep playing, keep communicating, and keep being exactly who you are. I'll see you next time.